courses. The Bhagavatam has this kind of circular structure because Krishna, of course, appears in the 10th canto, and then in the 11th canto is the detailed description of his departure. But we get in the first canto a kind of overture in which the devotees in that who are associated very much with the Mahabharata are revealing just how actually everything that's happened in the Mahabharata story, Krishna has been, we would say, in the wings. When you have a theater, there will be curtains on the left and the right side, and behind the curtains on the left or right side of the stage is called, in English, in the wings, behind, but not completely away. He's there. So Krishna is, he has been there all along, acting in so many amazing ways. Okay, let us chant. Desha kalarta yuktani.
Desha kalarta yuktani.
Desha kalarta yuktani.
Desha kalarta yuktani.
Ritta ho pashamani cha.
Ritta ho pashamani cha.
Ritta ho pashamani cha. Haranti smaratas chittam.
Haranti smaratas chittam.
Haranti smaratas chittam.
Haranti smaratas chittam.
Govinda vihitani me.
Govinda vihitani me.
Govinda vihitani me.
Govinda vihitani me.
Esha kalata yuktani.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Haranti
smaranta
shittam.
Haranti smaranta shittam.
Govinda
bi. Desha kalata yuktani.
Desha kalata yuktani.
Ritapo pashamani cha.
Ritapo pashamani cha.
Haranti smaratas chitam.
Haranti smaratas chitam.
Govinda bihitani me.
Govinda bihitani me.
Desha kalata yuktani.
Rita
po pashamani cha.
Haranti
smaratas chittam. Govinda vihitani me. Rita popashamani cha. Haranti smaratas chittam.
Govinda vihitani
me. Srila Prabhupada once said that if we chant the verse 10 times, then we will memorize it. So, what does this mean? Desha.
Desha.
Space.
Space.
Kala.
Kala.
Time.
Time.
Artha.
Artha.
Importance.
Importance.
Yuktani.
Yuktani.
Impregnated with.
Impregnated with.
Rit.
Rit.
The heart.
The heart.
Tapa.
Tapa.
Burning.
Burning.
Upashamani.
Upashamani.
Extinguishing.
Extinguishing.
Cha.
Cha.
And. Paranti.
Paranti.
Are attracting.
Are attracting.
Smaratas.
Smarata.
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 By remembering.
By remembering.
Chittam.
Chittam.
Mind.
Mind.
Govinda.
Govinda.
The Supreme Personality of Pleasure.
The Supreme Personality of Pleasure.
Avihitami.
Avihitami.
Narrated by.
Narrated by.
May. Unto me.
Unto me.
Translation, and I think part of it, it's a long purport, so I'll just be part. Translation purport by Sivan Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Now I am attracted to those instructions imparted to me by the Personality of Godhead, Govinda. Because they are impregnated with instructions for relieving the burning heart in all circumstances of time and space. Sometimes, in some temples, everyone repeats also the translation. Shall we do that? Now I am attracted.
Now I am attracted
to those instructions.
To those instructions
imparted to me.
Imparted to me
by the Personality of Godhead.
By the Personality of Godhead.
Govinda.
Govinda.
And what was Prabhupada's word for word translation of Govinda? Yes, the Supreme Personality of Pleasure. Because they are impregnated
with instructions
for relieving the burning heart
in all circumstances
of time and space.
Time and space.
Herein, Arjuna refers to the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, which was imparted to him by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The Lord left behind him the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, not for the benefit of Arjuna alone, but also for all time and in all lands, all places. The Bhagavad Gita, which the Bhagavad Gita being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom. It is nicely presented by the Lord Himself for all who have very little time to go through the vast Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Vedanta Sutras. It is put within the study of the great historical epic Mahabharata, which was especially prepared for the less intelligent class, namely the women, the laborers, and those who are worthless descendants of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and higher sections of the Vaishyas. The problem which arose in the heart of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was solved by the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Again, after the departure of the Lord from the vision of earthly people, when Arjuna was face to face with being vanquished in his acquired power and prominence, he wanted again to remember the great teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, just to teach all concerns that the Bhagavad Gita can be consulted in all critical times, not only for solace from all kinds of mental agonies, but also for the way out of great entanglements which may embarrass one in some critical hour. You all know the meaning of the word solace. So the Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada says can give us utyeha. That's so nice. And he says that we are provided with Bhagavad Gita since we may not have the time to read all of the Upanishads and the Brahmanas and the Vedanta Sutras, aside from maybe not being able to read the Sanskrit. Of course, now everything gets translated into different languages. But still, the point is, he says, this is the essence of all the wisdom, and it has these benefits, the Bhagavad Gita. So Arjuna was, of course, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, highly distressed. He received from Lord Krishna utyeka by hearing the Bhagavad Gita. But it's interesting that now he's remembered. This is many years later. This is, of course, after the battle, but it's also after, now it's after Krishna has departed, which is some years after the battle. And now he's remembering again the same instruction, but when he was on the battlefield, what was the upshot of the instruction to him? He had to get up and fight. That's not his conclusion now. He's again remembering the instruction, but he's getting a different understanding of that instruction. We may appreciate he has now a deeper understanding from Krishna's instruction now that Krishna has departed. So on that note, I think we want to proceed with our broader discussion, and Satchidananda Maharaj, I think you maybe want to set things in motion.
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavari Bhaskaryare Sadarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Govaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama, Hare, Hare. My dear devotees, in this joint class, each one of the three speakers will try to make some thought-provoking point in the context of the verse so that you will be enlivened to contemplate the subject and perhaps ask questions so that we have a lively, dynamic exchange. We will all speakers look at the wristwatch because we of interest of time. So here in this verse you find Arjuna in a very critical situation. Krishna has just left the planet. He had been sent by Yudhishthira to Dwaraka to find out Krishna's future plans hear from the Lord how the five Pandavas might be of service in these future plans of the Lord. But he had not returned from Dwaraka. Dwaraka. And Yudhishthira had become anxious because there was not even a word sent through a messenger from Arjuna why he was delaying so much. The reason comes out later when Arjuna finally returns, meets Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira can't recognize Arjuna's, the same Arjuna. You know, of course, he sees his brother, but he looks so dejected. His limbs tremble. He is pale in his face, white, not brown. He is totally upset with something. And Yudhishthira asks him for a few possible reasons why Arjuna could be impressed. And finally, he brings out the subject. He says, could it be that the son of the world, the world is dependent on sun. If the sun would not rise, there would be darkness, but even more severe, it would be so cold that no life could exist. So could it be that the son of the world, he who gave life to everyone, he who gives life to everyone, has set, it's gone. And Arjuna breaks down crying because, yes, that is what is behind him staying, staying longer than intended. And that is why he is now totally finished. He is so finished or depleted of energy that on the way back, when he was, you know, trying to fulfill the last mission which the Lord gave him verbally, and you know, in his presence, when the Lord was still present, he failed. Perhaps we will hear about this from other speakers, but yes, Arjuna understands the Lord has gone and he has taken with him those powers which he invested in me for some time. We will all experience this, that we won't be able to dance or speak or think or anything. These powers are borrowed from the Lord and they can be taken from the Lord also. So, but this is not, so to get out of his misery, what does he do? You remember? I think you remember. It's easy. You have just, yes, he remembered what Krishna had instructed him in the form of which literature? Bhagavad Gita, yes, thank you. He remembered this and took shelter of this in a time of trouble. And the point Prabhupada makes, this is for everyone. I have one fear in my life which consumes all other fears. It's the fear of the dentist. I somehow had traumatic experiences in my childhood, and whenever I go to the dentist and I know there will be some drilling, I take shelter in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I read it in the waiting room and to become peaceful, because I heard in my time when Prabhupada was with us, he had said, read the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita against anxiety. And yes, it works, but I still take strong injections. but it works psychologically. Yes. So, my dear devotees, this is not the only time where Arjuna remembers the Gita. In the great summary of the exalted subjects of the Bhagavatam, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni is on a search to find out who is what?
Krishna Vraja.
The greatest Bhakta, the greatest devotee. And he finally, in his search, comes to Arjuna and says, Arjuna, you are the greatest devotee. You are personally instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This time Arjuna is in another mood. He says, no. What you refer to as this important moment, which is the proof that I am dear to Krishna, is my greatest shame. Why this is so, we could listen from the hint of Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj, who said, the upshot, it's a new word I learned today, in Arjuna was, he was expected to do what?
Fight.
To fight. And Arjuna says, I didn't want it. And Krishna had to spend significant time before the battle to convince an unwilling servant. See what is my shame. I needed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was, getting on my case and chastising me and convincing me from various perspectives, philosophical, social perspectives. You will be scorned upon. All kinds of perspectives he used in order to convince me who, due to false ego, he said in the end, if due to your false ego, there's only one reason Krishna acknowledged why I would not fight. It was my lajananya, my false ego. So that stood in the way, and the Lord, the ogre, he must have had so many things in his mind, but he had to sit down with me and do a Bhakta talk, you know, a serious talk to motivate me. In the purport, we hear that this is just another ecstasy of Arjuna. It cannot be taken literally. He's just in his rasa. It's a rasa which he exchanges or feels at that moment. What I think you can now start to already think, in case your mind is not yet 100% active, or you are just enjoying this program because you see three Swamis in one line, and so on. What you can already think about is how you could draw inspiration and motivation from the Bhagavad Gita. What is in the way, you could think? Is there something which keeps me from being inspired to take up the book? Or what is there to learn? Or how can I understand such and such teachings? Please know, this program is dependent not on the three Swamis who sit before you. It is entirely dependent on you. The subject is standing before our eyes. There is a critical hour in our life, not just the dentist. There are many other things which come, and we can take shelter in the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita to find out, wait a minute, to find out what after. Udyaha. trying to speak the language, to find out some udyaha and also some direction and so on. Now we will turn to our Bhaktiananda Tirtha Maharaj, who will give us a little perspective on this subject, and then Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj, and then we will be able to ask our questions.
Maharaj, I feel comfortable and uncomfortable. I feel like I'm in very good company. But I'm also reminded of of an incident where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai to tell him something about Krishna. And Ramananda Rai felt uneasy to speak about Krishna to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he gave an analogy of a cloud in the ocean. He said that the cloud gets the water from the ocean and then it returns it to the ocean. And the devotees, the two Maharajas around me, my teacher, I don't know, I was just a baby when they were teaching others about Krishna consciousness, including myself. So in that sense, I feel quite out of place. But taking the analogy from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, you could be compared to the ocean. The cloud gets water from the ocean and then returns it to the ocean. A student should do that, should learn from the teacher and then return that to the teacher and ask for feedback. How did I do? I was instructed to try to make this very personal. In other words, try not to just repeat something you have heard, which is an excellent thing to do, but in addition to that, try to make it very, very personal, and I will attempt to do that now in a couple of minutes. Here, Arjuna refers to the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. He's in a distressful situation. I think we can all relate to that. And in this distress, he's remembering the instructions of Krishna, very specific instructions that now we call Bhagavad Gita, and that completely changes the situation. So now he has a different perspective on the situation. And I was thinking, okay, very specifically, I mean, we could think about many different sections of the Bhagavad Gita, and I don't know for what subjective reason, but the 15th chapter came to my mind of the Bhagavad Gita, perhaps because the topic of that chapter is liberation. That is the subject matter of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. As we see, Arjuna here is being liberated from his misery. And that's what liberation is. It's really a journey from here to there. It's an act of crossing over. It's an act of getting into transcendence. And that is the topic of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this chapter begins with the description of a tree, a banyan tree. And I assume most of you have seen a banyan. Has anyone of you seen a banyan tree? Not that many. Maybe half of you. This tree, very interesting. I mean, can grow really large, and the branches grow out, and then sometimes they grow down. And apparently, as they touch the ground, they create a root. So this branch becomes another trunk, and this tree becomes so complex. Oh my God, what a good analogy for this world. I mean, it's so easy to get entangled in this world. As a matter of fact, in this chapter, Krishna says that even the Vedic instructions, religious instructions, can be an entangling part. I mean, this world is designed to get you all tangled up. And the way to disentangle yourself from this world, and by the way, getting entangled in this world means that you get to eat everything this world has prepared for you. And sometimes it's very sweet, and sometimes it's very, very, very bitter, and everything in between. And the way to disentangle yourself from this world or from this tree is to cut the tree. I don't try to, I don't know, disentangle the branches, just cut the whole darn tree down. Just cut it in half. And what you should cut it with, you should cut it with an axe. And what is this axe? Does anyone know, perhaps?
Knowledge.
Everyone always says knowledge. I don't know why. Detachment. Then you should cut this tree with the axe of detachment. In other words, that's how this tree functions. It continues to grab your attention. And to cut it down is to disentangle your attention from this tree. And so this may seem like a mysterious proposition. I mean, how do you detach yourself from this tree? What does that mean? And so on. But Krishna explains it very shortly after. He says that you should find the source of this tree. And once you have found the source of this tree, you should surrender there. Of course, the source of this tree, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, like the source of everything, is Krishna. And you should surrender there. What does it mean to surrender? Prapanna means to come closer, to dedicate, to devote yourself. Give your attention there. That's where you should give your attention. And what's interesting that when you apply attention in one place, you have pulled attention from all other places. By focusing on the source of the tree, even while in the tree, one experiences detachment from the tree. Here comes a very personal part. So it says you should find the source of the tree. when I joined this movement, I claimed to have found the source. And I would even tell others what the source is or who the source is, and I would say, see, it says here in this, the good book says this is the source. But in due course of time, I found myself incapable or not completely capable to dedicate myself to the source. Why? Because I did not find the source. I was dishonest along my path. I mean, very interesting. Like, years went by in the lack of honesty. I was just repeating what everyone else would say, what was written in the book, you know, the things that you get applauded for. But I was not honest. And if someone was to ask me, how do you know God exists? I would have just repeated everything I heard. After many years, for the first time, I became darn honest with myself. And remember, this was not too long ago, unfortunately. very embarrassing thing to say. And I remember one Mataji, brand spanking new bhakta. In the passing, in the Zagreb temple, asked me something about God, and I told her that I wasn't sure whether God exists. And I took off.
Did she stay?
Yeah, she stayed. Yeah, I think she's it seems to me, I don't know her closely, but she seems to be a good devotee. despite me not knowing whether God exists.
But she remembers.
She remembers that, okay. I just remember the look on her face. But what my point here is that this is a very personal thing. Because I don't think that Sharada grows by dishonesty. It doesn't. Sometimes we have this thought that Sharada is something that you force, but Sharada is that which forces you. It works the other way around. And so therefore for Sharada in Krishna consciousness to grow, this is my experience, I think you have to be very honest. And so at this point, I was returned back to the beginning and start everything all over. But this time, being honest. Not believing something just because it's stated. But it had to be true to me. So I'll stop there.
Wonderful job. Yes, yes. Okay. Also, it is thought-provoking. And that is. Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj.
Well, I feel that I already took some time speaking, sure. A little bit that I did. So maybe it's time to go into. I think you were bringing up a particular subject that you thought we should say something about from our own experience. Why is it that we're still here? Something like that.
Yeah.
You want to explain.
Well, the whole idea is of such meetings which are more like Easter ghosties, where we discuss the transcendental subject, is to churn a little bit our Krishna consciousness. And I think Bhaktyananda Tirtha Maharaj had us thinking how honest is our faith. Is it just that we repeated something, or is it something that goes deeper than just mouth recitation? I thought if I would sit where you are in the audience, I would ask Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj, Maharaj, you are now so old. We see your hair is not becoming browner. It is, what kept you
going? Yeah. So
what kept you going in all these years? This would be a question I would ask, but perhaps you have questions. If you have no questions, I will ask you questions. So one of us, you can direct your question to anyone. I would like to hear from Bhaktyananda Tirtha Maharaj, then answer to this and this question, or any one of us. And I will be a little like the master of ceremony, sounds so arrogant. If I see that one person is not asked, I will see that also there's some balance and so on. So any questions you have? Please, I think so. Yeah, we have a microphone. Please think about your question. I'm saying to all of you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ananda Tirtha Maharaj, you spoke about the faith not being something forced, but something that forces you, and I find it very much resonating with me, because I often found that there are things that I am easy to have faith in, and there are things that I feel requested to believe in, but
I am not succeeding.
You requested to
believe in.
To believe.
But I am not succeeding in believing it. And there are things I am supposed not to believe in, and I still find myself believing in. And
wow.
And how does I manage this? Because oftentimes we all know that, for example, associating with the Lord is an essential thing, and if you are believing in things you are not supposed to believe in, and, or vice versa, then you are no longer fitting very well. How do you manage this? If you find yourself that place has to come from within.
That's a very good question. Really, really good, and I think quite valuable and super relevant. If it's true that one has to be honest with oneself, for the honest with Krishna consciousness, for the Shraddha in Krishna consciousness to grow, that means one needs to have the freedom. And there's a very interesting thing about group existence. A group has a tendency to insist on uniformity. Even of uniformity of experience, uniformity of conclusions and like that. And it seems to be like a better solution to insist on uniformity. Because, you know, in this way we can manage the group of people, we can manage the society, the institution, the tradition, things will all go in the same direction. But I personally think that's a huge flaw. I think that's where we fall into indoctrination. Because education is something that organically changes Shraddha. But if you allow that freedom and space for Shraddha to organically change, means you have to allow the space for the person to even have a difference of opinion. Historically speaking, this is just history, you know. Groups of people have a tendency, therefore, to stomp the differences of opinion. And as you live within a group of people, you experience this pressure. In the long run, what tends to happen is that people... You see, intelligence is not something you can limit. You cannot put a wall and tell intelligence, you cannot go behind that wall, dude. That's a California phrase. You cannot do that to the intelligence, you know. And so, but if you set up such walls, you lose people who are capable. You lose the intelligent people. You lose the brave people who have straight up enough courage to be honest, to go long on the journey. And again, those kind of people, I think, every group needs to grow, to be strong. To not end up like every other religious group tends to end up with. As soon as you amass a quantity, the quality goes out the window. Does that satisfy your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Is there another question, please? Yeah, I think Govindanandan could, and then after Govindanandan, Purushottam.
My question is a little bit in the line of the question that Prabhu just asked. It seems that it is not easy sometimes to deal with our own emotions, especially when they are unpleasant.
With our
emotions, when they are unpleasant, and when they overpower us, we tend to lose all philosophical or rational And this is, and it's especially hard to cope with unpleasant feelings of those who we love, and wounds of those who we love. So, how to deal with this power where you will get unpleasant emotions if you don't fit?
If you don't fit in.
Fit in.
No, this on the subject. See, we should really remain in the subject, and our Maharaji has very nicely explained. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, I'm in the hot seat again. That's why you. But I've had a very interesting realization that that to be rational is irrational. And I almost met a ruin of my own life. I have a tendency, I live in my head, I'm that kind of a person, you know. Even astrologically, I'm uncomfortably rational person. Even my friends used to accuse me of being coldly rational. And I had that approach to my search for the truth. And the interesting thing about being so rational that at the end you cannot conclude anything. It's not enough. It just cuts out most of the reality out of the picture, interestingly. And so I concluded that to be so rational that it's not rational. Much of who we are is composed of emotions. And even the conclusion of Krishna consciousness is, we could say, an emotion, rasa, bhakti, rasa, like that. And so as such, I find myself emotionally very vulnerable. I think even when I give lectures, I notice that if you honor people's emotional vulnerability, people respect you, what you said, even though you didn't have to make too much sense. And so, as such, I think every human being has a responsibility to protect themselves from emotional hurt. Of course, one should definitely balance one's own emotions, because emotions are not all there is. If I remember correctly, unfortunately I can't remember the exact reference, but it doesn't matter, let the statement fly on its own. And I think it's by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that the purpose of reason is to allow the emotion to grow unlimitedly. You know, once I saw a cartoon, there was the character of brain and the character of heart. And the heart was all bruised up and patched up and bleeding, and the brain is telling it, "I told you." So, yeah, we're emotional beings, but the rational side should guide the emotions in the right direction, not killing them. So in this way, I think we all have a duty, dharma, to protect our emotional vulnerability. How does this translate into our relationship with other people, or relationship with a group of people, relationship with our own very selves? That's really the land of wisdom, you know. It's an act of balance. And probably everyone learns as long as it lives.
Thank you very much. Purushottam was Prabhu was the next one. Do I miss others? There was one Mataji. Your good name again? Neshna will be the next, and then Mathurananda. No, yes.
Just when we were reading about Arjuna and Krishna taking souls. And I remember that Arjuna has a relationship with Krishna. And maybe because of this, he was able to find solace in the instructions of Krishna. And also we can see in the Pali literature that, you know, Narottamdas Thakur and also Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they have a really close relationship. And nowadays, personally, you're speaking about me, I can see between the devotees, maybe I'm seeing this. We don't have deep relationships. We are, you know, communicating like on the market. How are you? It's also good for not speaking. Not deep, honest relationship. And therefore, we are not speaking things we don't want to speak. And my question is, how is really important deep relationships, and because how will go on without this? Personally, I cannot find a way. We can do sadhana, we can go in groups, and we can do all the things, it's nice, but without relationship, there is no deep relationship, there is no taste in all of this. And how important it is, maybe Maharaj, I want to ask you.
What a very nice question, isn't it? You are very true. In bhakti, the foundation is sambandha jnana. We have to enter a relationship with Krishna, and that is done on a very general level. If we understand who is God, who are we, what is this world, and what are the relationships to God and to the world, no? And perhaps also to myself. So this is the foundation. Sambandha comes then is the foundation, and then it continues. You hear about Prayojana, and then you ask yourself, what's the Abhideya, the process to get me there? So yes, in spiritual matters, the relationship is important. Now, you are talking about relationships amongst devotees. Yes, you are absolutely right. If a linguistic research would be done about the conversations between devotees, they tend to be very superficial and end in socially acceptable phrases. How are you? How is your service going? Who is your Guru Maharaj? What is his... I don't know if it even comes to that. So it is a problem which we have, and therefore devotees starve in a relationship. And there is in many relationships in ISKCON, there is a culture of concealment. Now, this is a difficult English word. Concealment means you hide yourself, and I like to always in conversations poke a little and see my partners blush or pale when I go to the things they hide. Yes, because it is a North German tendency to do this. But these relationships which are not lived fully, which are where there is not full discussion, where there is just hiding behind, are very dissatisfying. It is not nourishing at all. And we need, as human beings, these deeper relationships. Keshava Maharaj, who is known as a thoughtful devotee also, he said every Sunday he met with his temple president, and the temple president talked with him for 1 hour about all the crazy things he couldn't deal with in the temple. And once he asked him, why are you doing this? I'm a new person. He said, I just need to talk with someone about the things which are in my heart. Someone who will not put it on the internet or wherever, or talk about this with someone else. In the Bhagavatam, there is a very interesting way to enter deep relationships, which are also truthful for devotees. It is, Prabhupada says, if you want a relationship with someone, it is only possible by the help of, or by the presence of someone else. It is only possible by the help of the super soul. And Prabhupada says, when two persons walk in darkness, they can't have a good relationship. They can't see each other even. It's darkness. It's scary. But if these two find light, the light of the sun, they can see each other. In the same way in relationships amongst devotees, why not be bold, Purushottam? Talk about Krishna. Mostly the devotee will feel, if you really talk from your heart about it, he will go through a thing, well, that's what interests me also in the deepest core of the heart. But you have to know how to get to the point of Krishna. If you just ask, what did you read this morning about Krishna? Then he will take a wet towel and slap it on your head. It is so artificial, so forced and so on. But perhaps talk about an event where you felt drawn to Krishna. Talk about your own journey. And if the devotee is not interested, it will never be a good relationship. If he is interested, you would see, this person is on my wavelength. He's interested in deeper relationships. I have found a good handful of friends by making this experiment. Those who are willing to talk about what interests me, they are interested in me. Those who are not willing, they will never be interested. And for them, I use a book of phrases. I have now you asked, what is your health, Prabhu? Later, before you had to ask, from where are you? You're traveling at the moment, and where are you going next? This is ISKCON acceptable phrases. There are a few others. What do you think about this scandal? That is also normal talk in ISKCON. But if you are not interested in this, you should and look for not these superficial relationship. Bring out Krishna. And Prabhupada says this, if I would have my notes, it's in the Ganga Vogam. Go Krishna can find it. Let my attraction flow like the Ganga to you. There is an amazing purport about relationships in Krishna consciousness. You know where to search? Madhu something. I think it's 1848. We can Let us do like this. Those who are interested in relationships can go to Guru Krishna. It will be half a person, most probably. Hare Krishna, I'm sorry to provoke your thoughtfulness. Good. Next person was, I think, yes, you're good. Observe. Please.
A footnote. So
yes, yeah, of course.
Some time ago, I was in Alachua, Florida. There's a quite large community of devotees in Alachua, Florida. And someone told me around 2,000 devotees live in the greater Alachua area. And I was speaking with one of my godbrothers, Kalakanta Prabhu, very, very sweet devotee. And we were just conversing, and he said, "Excuse me, Prabhu, but I need to go now because we have our men's group." I said, "Men's group? What is that?" He said, "Yes, we have a group of men devotees. There are also women groups." He said, "This group has, we've been meeting, I forget, since many years they've been meeting. A small group of devotees." And he said, and then I asked him about this one, tell me something more. He said, "Yeah, this is a group where we feel we can really share ourselves with each other. We have deep relationships because we've been doing this over such a long time." So I always thought that's something we could use more of, but the challenge is we're all very scattered geographically. And but one possible semi-solution is to create groups meeting online. I have a friend, a godmother, who meets with two or three others, I think several times a week, just reading Shastra, but discussing together. And he said, he told me, it's just so sweet. I'm also in a group which only manages to meet maximum once a week because we're in different parts of the planet and we're reading Sanskrit commentary of Sanatana Goswami. That's also a different kind of sangha, but it's also sweet. The point I want to make is, we say in English, where there's a will, there is a way. And if you want to have a deeper sangha, I believe it's possible. You can find this. Yes.
Thank you. This is a very practical suggestion. I think we can take note of it. Yes. Yes, there was one, Mataji.
Thank you very much. Yes, so I have for some time a big doubt about something I'm thinking about. And I see, I'm thinking, and I do not mentally understand like most of the things in Krishna consciousness. But like, we are reading about Vaishnava qualities, about traits, and they're all like, if we all get these traits, then we all become the same. So I don't understand, like, okay, one God, we are all the same, with all qualities we are trying to develop in the same or relatively similar way, so it a little bit bothers me. So where is the difference between real individuality and meekness, I would say. So thank you.
Who would you like your question to be directed to?
I
think when we look at, for example, literature such as Chaitanya Charitamrita, that we don't find uniformity of characters. I mean, these are all devotees that have... most of these devotees are actually what we would call liberated devotees or pure devotees, and yet they're all very different. Was it Vasudev Datta who was really bad with money?
No. Yeah, there was someone. I think Advaita Acharya, and then he was critical. He had a manager for his money, but I don't know.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appointed, I think he appointed Sarup Danga Swami or Shivananda Sen, I can't remember. Shivananda Sena appointed to manage the money of Vasudev Datta. Because he's really bad with money. So they're both pure devotees, eternal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and yet they're completely different. So I don't think it translates like that. Like if you develop compassion, I mean, everyone will develop, become a compassionate person in their own way, for example. Even relationship with Krishna, there's no two devotees that have identical relationship with Krishna. There's unlimited incarnations of Krishna to suit the different types of devotees, for example. There's even such a statement. So I don't think you need to worry about that. Just look around yourself also. And if I may, just one really brief. For example, Raghunath Das Goswami was super renounced. I mean, this person lived off of rice that even cows wouldn't eat. And they would wash this rice with plenty of water so that all the rotten bits of each grain would be washed away, and then just the middle portion of each grain that was still not bad would remain. And he lived on it. This was his food. It was so renounced, but that doesn't mean that other devotees are not like Ramananda Roy or I don't know, that they're not renounced. It's just this is this very unique person who has exhibited very specifically this one trait more than other devotees, and therefore would be, from a Krishna conscious point of view, be offensive to great devotees. Oh, this one's more renounced. Right? No, he's just exhibited that particular quality in his own way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I tend to forget. I see Sundarananda and our Mataji. Your good name, please? No, behind you. Huh? Zara. Jana. Yes, like the water brand, yes. Yes. Fine, then we will first give to Jana and then to Sundarananda, okay?
Thank you, Hare Krishna, Maharajas and devotees. My question is about attachment to devotees. Is there anything like too much attachment to devotees? And how to develop a healthy dose of self-sufficiency in Bhakti Yoga? A question for Satchinata Maharaj.
I may need the footnote of Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj on this one. You have to see on what level you have your attachment. If it is a spiritual level where you are so inspired, where you are receiving so much spiritual nourishment, where Krishna is the center and you move towards Krishna, this attachment is very good. It is described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. One should have attachments to sadhus. That is the cause of liberation from this world. No? There's this prasangamaj around and so on. Prasangamaj. Yeah, this is a different one, but it deals with, this section deals with it. There's one particular attachment to sadhus is good, attachment to materialists is not so good. So you have to see if your attachment to sadhus is really on the spiritual level or if there is a material level. For instance, you may make just a very, please excuse me the example, if a boy thinks, oh, this woman is so much choosing me in Krishna consciousness, but he is really only attached to the female energy, then this would be a cause of bondage, no? So you have to see on what level you are. On what level that is, and maybe you have to upgrade your attachment, but if it is based on getting nourishment and inspiration, that is very good. We find Narottamdas Thakur saying, Rama Chanda Sangamage Narottamdas. This Narottam wants the and craves for the association of his friend Ramachandra. This is very good. So just make sure, do a little inventory if you keep your attachment spiritual. I would like to add another point here. It is, you were asking to find the healthy dose. Healthy dose is, you know, like medicine, it's different for everyone, but a healthy dose is if you can find authenticity, if you remain authentic and don't develop codependent relationships where you are performing only according to the expectations and validation from others. This is the cause of psychological destruction if you only act according to the expectations of others. It starts for most of us in our childhood when our wardens, that is protectors, our parents, teach us if you do like this, you're a good boy and a good girl. If you don't do like this, you're a bad boy and a bad girl. Now, the child who is making himself dependent on the others will never ever be able to develop their own signature, their own personality. I have seen in Belkane education of children, this is very often done, no? And this creates a disorder that I'm only good when I fulfill the expectations of others. This will bring anxiety because you're never in contact with yourself. It will bring bitterness at the end. This sweeps over into the Hare Krishna movement where you feel I'm only good if I fill the expectations of others. I want to have a bird, the man. You know, but I will be told by the GBC, a bird is bad. Okay, let me shave up. If the bird is so important for you, I think it's. I'm just giving an example.
Speaking of birds or beards?
Beards. What is it? Beers? It's a beer. Beard, not bird. Oh, I think like this, and I want to express this, but if I am expressing it, I will not be liked. No? If you do this for too long, there are moments where we need to conform, you know. But if you do this for too long, you will be disappointed, you will be suppressed, and at one stage or other, your real nature will burst out and destroy your good name and fame, which we see. Do you know that many people leave ourselves with bitter feelings? The bitter feeling comes amongst other reasons because they couldn't be themselves. So to find your authentic path is very important. I encourage you, authenticity is not a matter of beards or not beards. Is it beard or what is it? The hair growth here in the face.
Beard.
It not authenticity, don't look for authentic self in your clothes style or hairstyle. Look for something which is closer to yourself, you know. But you need to live your authentic path. It's so important that Krishna repeats this, following your own Dharma, twice in the Gita. Krishna speaks only about one other subject two times in the Gita. Who knows what is Krishna's other subject? How a devotee should conduct himself. The other subject he talks about twice. He repeats himself. And there was little time to, it was just before the battle. He talks about following your own Dharma. To follow your own Dharma imperfectly is even more better than to imitate another one and do perfectly. It's dangerous, he says, and to follow another Dharma. And he also mentions when someone follows his own Dharma, his Swadharma, what is his purpose in this world? He or she will not incur any bad karma for the mistakes which happen in this world always. Dharma, finding your own authentic path. It's like this. Finding your own Dharma, your purpose, and living that authentically without being a copy of someone else. That is very important in spiritual life. And our intelligent Maharaj, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, has said that this is one fault of organization, that everyone throws his own authenticity out of the window in order to fit in. There are strengths of spiritual organization also, but when it comes to this, this is dangerous, and it is not often enough recognized that this is a problem. Organizations are very good when it comes to organizing a unified mission and following the order of the spiritual master and be spreading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. That's a great thing which organizations can do. There are other great things they can do, but here we need to be careful, and we need to be careful. Yes. So yes. Sorry. So find your healthy dose. Find yourself. Don't force your Shraddha. Discover your Shraddha. This is another point I take from you, Maharaj. You can't force it. You have to discover it, and then it will motivate you and carry on you on and strengthen you throughout your life. Hare Krishna. There is was Sundarananda.
Thank you, dear Maharajas, for wonderful sharing of the organizations.
Are
we okay with time?
I don't know,
Maybe we should make this the last question, because I heard some growling of a stomach here. That's the best. See if they're ready. So, Nandananda, could you please direct your question to Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj for
me? So, thank you so much once again for sharing your realizations. I hope my question will not be too controversial. I grew up to the music of 70s in beach poetry. There's a very good, diagnosis of the situation, but not of the solution. And Krishna consciousness, for me, offers a solution, but I'm also aware, and you are talking about this through these presentations, that the process of Krishna consciousness is suggested to be practiced in association of devotees and with the same aim Srila Prabhupada created this time, to facilitate the spiritual process of individuals. But then we find out that unfortunately the institution very often do not support this facilitation of spiritual quest of individuals, even can do harm. And I somehow, by Krishna's mercy, I feel this ongoing enthusiasm to share Krishna consciousness with others, but at the same time I have the reluctance to introduce people to institution because of this experience. And now we're also sharing the same things, and it seems that there is no solution, actually, unless we offer to the individuals be careful and develop yourself according to your own, developments. You understand that you as teachers, you are sharing realizations, but then institutions do not support it. Let's be honest, it's a true. It sometimes appears that the management is like in movies, you know, somewhere in some remote place controlling the situation, but not really acting for the real benefit of the people. And one of the rare souls which I know that openly discussing this is Mahaprabhu Gaura, who is here, who is writing beautiful thesis and essays on his Facebook about these subject matters. But generally, even you as preachers are reluctant to openly discuss this subject matter, and it's like all this elephant is in the room, but we are not addressing the subject matter. So, what's your suggestion for the solution of the individuals in the institution which doesn't support individualism, they can say it is, or cannot support, or I don't know how to understand this.
I think it's good if we all answer this at the end.
Talking about hot seats. So. Yeah. Perhaps we can start with a reference to the, I think it was a German scholar, Max Weber. Sometimes said to be the sort of the founder of modern sociology, study of sociology. who spoke about the routinization of charisma. Routinization. How would you say routinization?
Rutina, da, ali kako...
Rutina, to
je imenica, kako blago, blago bila, rajte od imenica.
So you need a whole sentence to translate routinization.
Routinization, yes.
A couple of days ago, I was mentioning how Srila Prabhupada had this way of sort of throwing everyone into the deep end of the pool, the swimming pool, and sink or swim. So we have, as a result, the Krishna consciousness movement, and Srila Prabhupada many more times then he referred to ISKCON, he referred to the Krishna consciousness movement in the preface to Bhagavad Gita. He speaks of the Krishna consciousness movement, I think, 6 times. And not once does he refer to the institution, the formal institution of ISKCON. And one thing which I must give credit to Madhavananda Prabhu in Puri for this, I feel, valuable insight, is that whereas in the early days of ISKCON, ISKCON and the Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement, were pretty much the same. You could say they were co-extensive, to use a little bit of fancy expression. But that is, since so many years now, that's just no longer the case. And I think one of the things that's keeping the institution from moving forward, from getting more mature and doing the needful for promoting the movement of Krishna consciousness, is simply to recognize this and to acknowledge it and to accept it, and not imagine itself to be still coextensive with the Krishna consciousness movement. I've a few times suggested there could be discussions about this on the, you know, organizational level. But it seems to be something that is not talked about, as you said. So many things are not discussed. Another general point I'll make, and then I'll pass the hot potato and the elephant to the others, is an observation by one scholar, the late Joseph O'Connell, who was a scholar of Gaudiya Vaishnavism for many years. Very strongly well-wishing person to our mission, but also having a very full appreciation of the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He was a historian. He said there are two kinds of institution. There's soft institution and there's hard institution. And he says, in his own understanding. I don't agree fully with what he said, that's a detail, but in general he said there was institution at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but it was soft institution. And what we see today, and he's referring with all good wishes, but he wants to say, you know, let's recognize what we see today with ISKCON is a hard institution. Meaning, you know, there are resolutions and there are there's
about everything,
so many designations for everything. And so if we think about, we read Chaitanya Charitamrita and we think, yes, this is what we want. We want more of this, more of Lord Chaitanya's movements. I think it's helpful just to think in terms of this distinction. And it's something that could use more discussion. So these two things, I would say, what may help us to move this discussion, which you are raising, would help in that discussion, which I think has to be an ongoing discussion. Okay.
Hare Krishna, because this is a question which has life, like all the other questions, very good questions. And I want to just comment something following the hard and soft institution idea of Joseph O'Connell. I was given that part of his book by Kadamba Kanana Maharaj to read, and yes, this soft institution, he was talking about, you know, the movement kept together by meeting regularly, singing the songs of the previous acharyas, introducing new songs, Narottam Das Thakur songs, having festivals, and in this way keeping the Gaudiya fold together and enlivened. Also, there were at that time Easter Ghosties, you know, meeting about important questions which were moving the community. And then the heart institution, that would be something like creating a Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did this, creating a management system, the GBC, which was really inspired by the way the British managed their railroad system all over India. Keep the wheel rolling was the motto of the railway system. I know because I'm from a family of railway people. So they needed to organize the whole organization and of the railway and got a structure together, which then, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, should be, it can be helpful for organizing the preaching. I think it is important to bring into this discussion about the question, what can institutions do and what can they not do? And to answer this question, I want to refer to the late Kadamba Kanana Maharaj, who had a wonderful working model where he divided the Hare Krishna movement really in three distinct sections. The first, he started with what he called the bureau, the office, and that is where the GBC sits. The second level is Panchanga Bhakti, the execution of the five powerful limbs of devotional service. And the third, very distinct, is the Prayojana, the goal, that is love of Godhead. So, I believe in modern times there is the danger, you know, that the office tries to say it does, it is everything. ISKCON is everything. ISKCON is something. Something very important, but not everything. There needs to be the individual, so ISKCON can organize wherever collective things are necessary, temples, movements, and so on. But then there needs to be a second level, that is totally individual. It's totally in your hands. It's how will you execute Panchanga Bhakti? The movement ISKCON is you are in charge of that. And the third level, attaining love of God, it's also you who is in charge of it. This is very important to understand these three levels and to know what they can do and what they cannot do. It's important to understand for you as an individual within the movement, and it is important for the movement also to know where they can only perhaps inspire and encourage and leave it up to the individual. You offered a problem which is very realistic. I discussed this with leading devotees who are also GBC members. It's okay discussion. It's an okay discussion. Sometimes as preachers we feel we cannot send the people we cultivate to certain temples because they will come in contact with talk that is not favorable for their development of Krishna consciousness. One very prominent leader in our society has therefore said, given an amazing thoughtful consideration. He said, preachers should always know to whom they can send their people. And they could even have a network of addresses where they feel the Bhakti Lata will be cultivated and so on. We must also acknowledge, I think, there are some people who are starving to find a prescriptive form of spirituality. Tell me what to do, you know. And for them, certain temples where this type is lived may be advantageous, you know, for some time of their journey. So I want to now close. Sundarananda Prabhu, you know me. I'm not born with a very systematic mind. I'm not also a big follower of any type of institution. I couldn't even manage to stay in the school. I had to run away when I was 15 or 16 because I don't like to be prescribed what to think. It doesn't work. I rebel, I become ill if this is happening, and I don't go to places where I cannot share what I know, and so on. It is, I'm not that type of person, you know me, and so on. But I have made peace with ISKCON. ISKCON's GBC. I think they're doing great work. Without having this, there would be no Hare Krishna movement with such an extensive thing. Yes, they can do better, but you can always do better. But I have personally seen, I can follow my own spiritual calling, and I can do and so on, as long as I don't disturb others. And I don't have to, you know, I can preach everywhere. And let's also be here in Serbia. You do everything you want. Sometimes you may do things which are even harmful for you. There's no one who tells you. You can find your situation. You just need to know what is what, where is what, and so on. Even you are now doing, you are doing a very wonderful project in Zagreb, and I think it is prospering because, yes, you found a way how to do it without any unnecessary disturbance, no? So I think this is what I think. I congratulate the devotees who do the service of GBC. I do not always, I cannot agree to all decisions, because I think, how can anyone think like this in this universe? But my thinking is also not 100%. I'm also only a conditioned soul, stuck in a certain way of thinking. But I can see the main thing to which I was attracted, I can do Panchanga Bhakti. I can do it anywhere. I can go in this forest and start my Panchanga Bhakti program. You know, it is possible. Freedom is a value that is there in spiritual life, and sometimes organizations tend to curtail it. That's unfortunate, but that's what all groups do. Anywhere. ISKCON is not the only. Oh, look at the. ISKCON is not the only. It's what groups do in general. But one needs to come to peace and needs to understand and then find his own path and do it. And I think eventually anyone will find it, or he will leave this wonderful process due to wrong expectations in what can be done by an organization and what cannot be done. I'm sorry to speak like this, but you can see after 50 years, Sundarananda and everyone, yeah, we had to wrestle with these things. We also, Krishna Chaitanya and myself, have talked privately about, oh, this isn't what development is this, and so on. But we find. Okay. So our last speaker on this is who started all of us thinking like this by saying that authentic faith is necessary, and sometimes you need to start all over again to find your authentic faith and so on. So we will give you the last word. Hare Krishna.
I'm not sure if I want to say thank you. Thank you for putting me to a test. Well, I also do have had personally also a fair share of troubles with the issue at hand. And super wonderful insights. Thank you, both of you, I found that very, very useful, what you have said, soft and hard institution, very wonderful, very, very helpful. I have grown to see institution in general, and we could say ISKCON as an institution in particular, as a mother. And you can't live without a mother, you know. But mothers can also be, there's a non-psychological phenomenon, all-devouring mother. All-devouring mother. That's an overprotective mother, you know, who's very concerned. Like, one example from a real-life mother. I know a mother wouldn't allow her child to play with other kids for fear that the kid would break his leg. That's gone way too far. And so exactly where the balance is, I think that's an eternal tension. What you have is different forces at play, and depends which force applies itself more, pushes the other away. But I think they're both there at all times. And if it's Aymarica, how do you say that in English?
Jack and Jill.
Jack and Jill, that's the latest one. Hansel and Gretel, that's what I remember, yeah.
Hansel and Gretel,
that's German. That's German, correct. It's a German story. Yeah, the old witch there is compared to an overprotective mother. I mean, the kids in the forest come upon a house made of sweets. You know, but the end result is they're going to be eaten. So, you know, you can't live without a mother. I mean, there's got to be protection, you know. There has to be orientation and some fences and so on like that. But if the mother is overprotective, then what you have is devouring. Like, it devours the life out of it. And there's a very good example of it in Croatia. I'm not sure about Serbia. You know what Ludijada is, or Norijada?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, do you have that in Serbia or Bosnia? At the end of a school year, when I was a kid, at the end of a school year, you had enough of people telling you what to do, what to think, what to write. You're free. And we would run out of the school and rip. Shred the books and notes and notebooks to pieces, and the whole town would be covered in paper. And then we'd all go and jump into the, I grew up on the sea, but we'd jump into the sea. In other cities, they would jump into the water fountains. And the kids would be wild. But what happened in due course of time? I mean, what you have there is like unbound, raw honesty. You know, of kids being themselves. The powers to be hated it, and now they organized it. Now they made it civil. You know, now they made a thing. They even gave it a name, Norijada or Ludijada. Lud means crazy.
They domesticated it.
And now it's all organized. It's lifeless. Yeah, you can be crazy over here. They didn't rent a, like a... It's not it. It killed it. And I know this, you know, this is what tends to happen with institutions, you know, like it chokes the life out of the mission, you know, if you allow it to go far enough. And then there's no life. It's just a, you know, soldiers who repeat the same dumb thing. Maybe not dumb, but it's, you know, it's lifeless. But what you need to allow is like people to have a life.
What is this?
And very
Ludi,
interesting how Prabhupada right, managed Ludi, to capture Ludi, that wildness
Ludi Anska?
Of the energy of the youth and not suffocate it, but channel it into ISKCON. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. I'd like to give one example, which is from Srila Prabhupada's management. And I thought this was pretty good. I always felt this was... I was a temple president for 13 years. I was part of the establishment. So, you too, correct. So, I've seen the situation from both ends. But Srila Prabhupada always tried to resist the centralization. But by giving, you know, power to local communities. Now I may get into huge trouble, but I'm always surprised how in this area everything always wants to be centralized. Don't put this on the internet. I'm going to lose a job. Because then you dissipate this, you know, megalomania or, you know, trying to control everything, make everything uniform, which... But, so, mother. But you have a mother that has a tendency to fall out of balance. Did I end that right?
Yeah, very, very good.
Did I end that on the right notes?
Wonderful.
I don't know.
Yeah. Fantastic. Madhva Muni, what is the situation with the kitchen? We are ready?
They ate everything.
Oh, okay, my dear devotees, we will end the program here. Please don't run out at this moment. Madhva Muni will give us the orientation for today. Just 1 minute.